Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is Julie Calamine, one of two of your morning show hosts, and I'm joined this morning. Oh, I'm so lucky. I'm joined by Julie Perchinsky. Hi, Julie.
Hello, Julie. Good to see you this morning.
And you too. It's a beautiful Tuesday in spring in Sandpoint. We can't really ask for more. Unless we were to ask for a great guest. You know, she's making me laugh. Unless we were to ask for a great guest, and we have one today. It's the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society. I'll do introductions in a minute. But first, we're going to have some weather by Julie.
Yes, I'll start with the weather, Julie. That seems like a good place to start.
I think so.
Today, mostly sunny with a high near 67. Partly cloudy with a low tonight of 38. Light and variable winds. Wednesday, partly sunny with a high near 65 with a little bit of south wind, 5 to 11. And Thursday, it looks like we might be getting some chance of rain. So Thursday and into the weekend, I think that we're gonna have a little bit of rain and a little bit of weather coming in. So get your garden in.
That's right. Hey, I got a little garden in yesterday. I started some herbs and some lettuce. And let's see, my arugula I had to reseed. I put them in pots and I'm going to put them out in the garden once they get going.
Good. Sounds great.
Right. It feels good to have the hands in the soil, doesn't it?
It does. My peas have finally popped through. I planted them March 20th.
So. Oh, boy.
I mean, I kind of jumped the gun a little.
Maybe.
Poor little
possible.
Things.
Well, these are, we've just been talking about plants that we grow and we cultivate. There are garden vegetables, et cetera, and herbs. But that is not our topic for today, because today we are going to be talking about all things native. And we are joined today by two people who know a lot about this. They're members of the board of the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society. We have Preston Andrews. You're the vice president. Hi, Preston.
Hi, Julie. Hi, Julie.
Hi, hi. It's nice to see you again. And also Robin Campbell, and you're a board member too. Hi.
Hi, I am a board member.
Yes, and so we are lucky to have you. We're going to learn some things about native plants and learn about the society too. But I have to start with a little story, and I think it'll make you two laugh. I was at the Native Plant Society program on Saturday, and they are so informative. You can go to the library. You can also Zoom in and watch them remotely if you can't make it. And I looked up the topic, and it was medicinal plants for the Native Plant Society. So I thought we'd be learning about, oh, who knows what. But we had a lovely lady from, oh, she was from Cedar Mountain something or other.
Herb school.
Her name was Susan Tabert. And up came the introductory slide, and it said, uses of non-native invasives. You guys are brave.
Well, we were happy to learn about those plants, and Kinnickinnick was mentioned, so
it's true.
We learned about the medicinal properties of that.
And there were about 60 people in the room, and nobody revolted and got a pitchfork or anything, so I was very proud that everybody behaved well, and it was very interesting. One of many programs that you do, so I'll get back to our outline, but had to mention how much fun that was on Saturday. All right, so we'd like to start by learning just a little bit about both of you and how you came to be part of the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society. Why don't you start, Preston?
Well, I'm a plant person at heart, because I was a professor of horticulture at Washington State University for 25 years. And so I work with plants all the time and help to educate students about the use of plants. And then when I moved here in 2012, actually, I retired in 2015. I wanted to participate in more plant activities, and so the Native Plant Society was one that I chose.
Very nice. And Robin, how did you come to be on the board?
Well, I too have an interest in plants that goes way back. I was married to a plant ecologist, and I took plant taxonomy classes just so I could understand what he was talking about. this was in the Intermountain region. And there was a lot of, we do have a lot of Intermountain plants in our area. Anyway, many years passed. I moved to Sandpoint and I bought a property up on a hill, and I decided to do some landscaping. So I joined the Native Plant Society to take advantage of their landscape consulting service. And as many volunteer organizations do, you join and they decide you need to be involved. So within a year, I was asked to be on the board. So I've been on the board for, well, Preston and I have both been on the board for about 5 years. We're moving into our final terms.
Yeah, it's happened to me too. I've been on the board of the Plant Society and it's fun.
It is fun. It's a great group of people. They're very supportive, very cooperative. Everybody works together. We all have a common interest and common goals.
And you really learn a lot when you're on the board.
You learn a lot.
Yes, you do. All right. Well, what great beginnings. And here you are on the boards finishing your terms. Why don't you tell us a bit more about the history and the mission of the Native Plant Society?
Well, I guess that's my topic, I guess. Our mission is to foster an understanding and appreciation of the native flora, its habitats in the panhandle here in North Idaho. We do that basically through conservation, through encouraging the use of native plants in landscaping and restoration, and education. We try to do programs that will be educational for both kids and the general public that centers around native plants and our ecosystem. KNPS was founded, or the organization that eventually became KNPS was founded by Lois Wythe in 1997. She put up a poster saying, anybody interested in native plants? And she announced a meeting. 60 people showed up. And that was the beginning. So the organization was officially started. The first big project they took on was the idea of an arboretum. They approached several places to locate it. Things weren't working out. Finally, talked to the city. And at that time, Lakeview Park just had this area that didn't have much going on in it except a lot of big trees. And the gardeners there were wrecking mower blades, mowing the lawn because that it kept hitting the big roots of these big trees. And so the KNPS group came in and said, we'd like to make an arboretum here and we'll take care of it. So they came to an agreement. And there's 1.18 acres are currently in the arboretum, and the city provides water. They empty the trash containers. They take down danger trees or trees that have fallen due to disease or storms or whatever. But everything else there has been done by the Native Plant Society, all volunteer labor.
Wow. No input, no funds from the city. You all just do it.
No funds from the city. In return, we don't pay any rent for the land. We have a kind of a interesting lease-sublease system set up. And it's been a mutually symbiotic relationship, we would say.
I would say so. That's very neat.
It's a great location, too, back there in the corner and kind of away from all the activity of the park, yet special in its own way.
It's nice because we have a nice relationship with the History Museum.
Yes.
Because we're right behind them and span across the whole back of Lakeview Park.
Yes.
It's great. And the other thing that I like about the Arboretum is the labeling, because sometimes we forget what plant is what, and it's a nice refresher.
Yes, and we're always working on those signs.
That's a never-ending job.
It is.
That's right.
We might also say that it took quite a bit of effort to put that arboretum in, and neither Robin or I were there when that was done, but it was the major construction was from 2000 to 2002, and all the rock walls and all of the paths and all of that was a lot of work.
And I'm remiss in not saying this is our 25th anniversary. The Arboretum was dedicated on Arbor Day 1999. And so we're looking back and celebrating what we've done. And we're looking forward and trying to see where we want to go for the next foreseeable future. I'd say 25 years, but I won't be around that long. So
no, congratulations. That's awesome.
And hopefully it'll be around a lot longer than the next 25 years too.
Yes.
Well, the Arboretum in itself is a very big job for a group of relatively small group of volunteers, but you do a lot more. What else? There's the annual plant sale that's coming up.
Right. The annual plant sale is going to be June 8th, and it's going to be right in front of the museum. And we'll have some crafts. We'll have a bake sale. We'll have our Landscaping with Native Plants book available to purchase for people who want to learn more about native plants and buy the native plants and take them home and plant them in their garden.
We do this sale in cooperation with Cedar Mountain Perennials. They're a little nursery in Athol. They have been growing native plants. I believe they started in 2009, and they're a wonderful resource. And they also are members of KNPS, and they help keep us honest about what is a native.
They do. A shout out to Bob Wilson to thank him for all the work he does to show up and be so informative at that plant sale.
Yes.
Now, does he provide all of the plants for that sale?
Yes. Their nursery provides the plants for the sale. They're a great resource, and you can go down and talk to them. And we also have, there will be four or five people there who are pretty expert, including Bob and Jill Wilson. And if you have questions about what would work well in this area of your yard, you have a really wet area or a really dry area or a really shady area, they can steer you toward the native plants that will do well in those conditions.
Yes, because you can't just necessarily stick a native plant anywhere and expect it to thrive.
That's right. They're very picky.
They can
some
be.
Of them.
a couple of additional features we're going to have this sale is Snake River Seed Cooperative, which is a cooperative that spans all the way from the Snake River Lewiston up north here. We'll be selling seed packets, native and some garden vegetable seeds as well. And I think we're going to have a composting workshop that Ken Thacker will put on later that morning.
And if you're interested in pollinators, the Mighty Monarch organization will be having a booth at our plant sale, and they'll be giving away, I believe, milkweed seeds. Milkweed, our native milkweed, is the only plant that the monarchs use. They lay their eggs on it. The larvae eat the milkweed plant, and then they cocoon, and then they become butterflies. So if you're interested in butterflies or pollinators, stop by their booth and plant a few milkweed in your yard and see maybe some monarchs will show up.
Yes, I am eternally hopeful to see my first monarch out in the West, so I'll have to pick some up and see if I can make that happen. They're pretty rare, aren't they, the monarchs?
They're rare up in North Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
Down south in the Treasure Valley, there are many more monarchs. So we're a little bit colder and wetter, but we're hoping to lure them up here with our milkweeds.
That's great. Well, that's a pretty big day. Bake sale, perennials, seeds, free information. Oh, quirky yard art. I didn't see that.
And I don't think we mentioned the time. It's from 9 to noon. People show up right at 9 o'clock, and the plants are a hot item. So
yes,
if you're interested, 9 to noon on Saturday, June 8th.
Okay.
Last year, we sold out very early, and so the Wilsons are going to bring more plants this year. So they're getting prepared for a lot of eager native plant purchasers.
Good. So if you came last year and weren't able to get the plants you wanted this year, come early. And yes, come back and come early. Sounds like a good plan. Well, that's exciting. I'm putting that on my calendar. Moving on, though, programs. Programs are really fun. Let's hear about them.
Okay, programs. Well, I'm the coordinator of the programs that we offer, and we offer 9 programs each year. So there's 6 in the winter, spring. We take July and August off, and then we have programs September through November. And we have all sorts of topics, plants, of course, pollinators. We bring in community groups that talk about their projects. all sorts of things that we offer. And that takes place on the third Saturday of each of those months at the East Bonner County Library in Sandpoint, and starts at 9:30 with coffee and tea and treats, and then the program gets underway at 10 o'clock. And Julie had mentioned the program on wild medicinal plants, but our program's coming up on May 18th will be Pete Rust from the Idaho Fish and Game talking about the Pack River Delta Wildlife Restoration Project. And if you know anything about these restoration projects, one of the Idaho Fish and Game biologists, Kathy Cousins, years ago, did a first phase at the Pack River Delta and then moved on to work at the Clark Fork Delta. And she enlisted Connecticut Native Plant Society members to help plant natives out in the Delta there. So we participated in those restoration efforts. So that will be our May 18th program. And then our June 15th program will be Austin Terrell from the Governor's Office of Species Conservation. The governor has an office on species conservation, and they deal a lot with mitigating grizzly issues in North Idaho. That's probably one of the biggest things. But they also work on preservation of whitebark pine, which is threatened under the Endangered Species Act now. So that'll be an interesting program. We'll learn about Canadian lynx, wolverines, monarch butterflies. They're also at risk, and whitebark pine, and grizzlies.
And whitebark pine is our state tree.
I did not know this.
Oh, sorry. It's western white pine.
The white bark are
white
the high
bark
mountain.
Are the high mountain.
Yes.
Yep. Yes. Okay. I'm glad we got that correction so that we didn't have to come on later and make a correction. Very good. Well, it's so interesting that Fish and Game has a department that is related to non-hunting and fishing.
Yes. Yeah.
That'll be a good one.
Yeah, we're looking forward to hearing what's going on. I think people driving Highway 200 have probably seen construction and earth-moving equipment out there building up islands.
Yes, at the Pack River.
Exactly.
Yes.
And this summer they're going to be planting natives out there, plants. Yeah.
You be involved with that then
we
as
don't,
well?
We don't know yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I wanted to ask whether one needs to be a member to attend these great programs.
No, you do not need to be a member. And sometimes we have more non-members than members. And I think this past Saturday we had a lot of non-members, and we had a lot of people on Zoom all the way from Boise. There were some people from Boise that attended.
That's neat. But one might decide to become a member because there are some benefits. If they wanted to become a member, how do they go ahead and do that?
Oh, becoming a member is very easy. If you come to any one of our meetings, we have a little membership form. You can fill it out. You can go online and you can join as a member. It's relatively inexpensive, and there's no real duties, except if you're a really avid gardener and an organized person, we might ask you to be on the board. No.
Watch out. Watch out, prospective members.
No, it's a great group.
Yeah, and when are your meetings? When are they held?
The meetings are, as Preston said, there's the third Saturday of the month from 9:30 to about 11:30. And we skip July, August, and December. So,
oh, those are the meeting schedules. Okay.
Yeah, we don't do meetings in July, August. We're all out in the garden. Or December, we have a member party. So we do have some member events. We have a summer get-together, and we have our holiday party. And it's just a really fun group of people. We do workshops or work parties in the Arboretum, and after the work party, everybody brings a lunch, and we sit around and have our lunch and talk and share what's going on with our lives and each other. And it's a fun group of people.
It really is. And another aspect of the monthly programs is that the doors open at 9:30 and the program begins a little after 10. And that's a nice social gathering, too, with treats and coffee, et cetera, where one can learn and ask questions about native plants.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good, very helpful. All right. So we've talked about programs, and your website's pretty good. Let's hear about it.
Well, we recently revamped our website, tried to get a lot of information, but not so much that you'll get cross-eyed. And it has, we do post on the web page, on the front page, if you scroll down a little bit, we do post our events. So it's an easy way to keep up with what we're doing, what's coming up, get it on your calendar. We also post the KNPS Journal, which is a bi-monthly newsletter. It's quite a long newsletter. I mean, we usually have 7-8 pages in our newsletter. Interesting articles, also upcoming events, things like that. The website also has our Plant Notes blog. I don't know if you may have noticed in the Sunday paper, the Bee, the last 3 years, there was a little article about a native plant. And we create those and we post them on the blog. So they're all there going back 3 years. We also have some trail plant lists. If you're interested in, you know, check the plant list. If you're going to go on a specific trail, you might, it will tell you what you can look out for. What else do we have on the website?
Well, we might want to mention the name of it. And luckily, listeners, you don't have to be able to spell Kinnikinick to get there.
Absolutely. It's a great name. NativePlantSociety.org.
Pretty easy. Pretty Even easy. I can remember that one.
And the other thing you can do on the website is if you're interested in getting more information, you can fill out a little form at the bottom. I think it's at the bottom of the front page. And we can send you information like through emails of what our events are going to be. And so you can get that information even before you become a member.
You can also, if you're on that list, you will also get our journal, the newsletter.
It's really good. There's almost always one part of that newsletter that's beneficial for me. I think you guys do a great job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we've talked about a lot, but
yes.
I think it's time for just a break for us to regather and think about other topics.
Excellent.
Next topics.
Excellent idea, Julie.
What do you got, Julie?
Well, I've got Cat Stevens, Where Do the Children Play? We'll come back and find out where the children play at Lakeview Park at the Arboretum. And this is 88.5 KRFY. We'll be back.
And this is KRFY, listener-supported community radio for the Idaho Panhandle. This is, I am Julie Calamine, and I'm joined by my most favorite co-host these days, Julie Prochinski.
Good to be here, Julie.
Yes, and we are joined this morning by the Kinnikinick Native Plant Society, and our guests are Preston Andrews, the current vice president, and Robin Campbell, who is a board member. And we've been talking about everything Native Plant Society, and we're moving on to the education programs that they host. So who would like to grab that topic?
I'll take that one on. We do a number of things that bring people to the Arboretum, or we use the Arboretum as an outdoor classroom. One of those that's coming up May 28th through 30th is what we call tree tours. We invite third grade classes. We contact the schools and invite third grade classrooms to come to the Arboretum and learn a little bit about the native trees. And this year we will be hosting about 250 third graders over these 3 days. They come and we have a docent or somebody who knows about the trees in stations. There are 5 stations around the Arboretum. We move the kids from station to station, and the person there explains about the tree, does some fun little things with them about the trees, and tries to encourage them to kind of get up close and personal with a big tree. Go give it a hug.
Hug a tree.
Yes.
Does that make them provisional tree huggers?
Well, sort of. But anyway, so Tree Tours is a wonderful program. We've been doing it for a number of years. I believe all but 2 third grade classes in the Sandpoint area in the district are participating this year. And we use all volunteers to put this on. They earn, just some fun things and fun facts. And it's a great program. Another one that happens in July, and this one is newer. This is our 3rd year for this one. It's called Tree Cookie Tuesdays. And that's kind of like a little mystery. There's a question that has to be answered. And this one this year focuses on pollinators. And it happens on July 9th, 16th, and 23rd. July 9th is about native bees, and there will be a mystery to solve. And the kids come in and they follow the path. There are some posters with information. And then when they find the answer to the question at the beginning, they come back to the main, to our little shed there, and they earn a tree cookie, which is a section of a tree where you can see the rings, and we put our stamp on it. So that's a little souvenir to take home. And they also get some real cookies. Mm-hmm. And then there are some games and activities and things they can do there too. And that's in the morning on those 3 days. And it's not at any specific time. You just come and do the activity. We are have a couple of do-it-yourself projects on May 11th.
Oh, I'm going to just stop you for a second, Robin, because I've got questions.
Oh, I've got questions. Okay.
I understand that the first program, Tree Tours, that's through the school district, but the summertime programs, any child can come?
Any child can come.
All right. And are you looking for a certain age range or not really?
It's geared toward elementary school children. Okay. And it's, you know, we've had daycares bring their kids through. We've had grandmas and grandpas bring the kids through and parents. And
sure. Do they need to sign up in advance?
No.
Okay. All right.
That's just show up that day.
Just show up and anytime between 9 and noon and participate. And so we have different groups going through at different times.
Okay. And if they forget all this listening this morning, they can go to nativeplantsociety.org. And
absolutely.
Great. Yes. All right.
Sometimes we just, kids come over from the playground or from tennis camp or, you know, they just come through as groups of families. They don't have to be at any specific times. Just come through
just
when
casual.
You want to during the morning.
Very nice. Yeah. That sounds fun. All right. Sorry to interrupt.
No problem. So we do have a couple of demonstrations and a workshop coming up. One is hypertufa making. Now, when I first heard that word hypertufa, I didn't know what it meant. So I went and looked it up. But it's a way of making containers, permanent containers to hold plants. They're really popular for succulents and little outdoor gardens. And they're made out of vermiculite and something that glues it together. And you kind of shape it in a bowl or a mold of some kind. And then they gradually weather and they kind of look like the old Victorian outdoor planter things. And they make wonderful places in your garden where you want something a little more decorative. And so this is going to be a demonstration. They will show you how to do it. They will have examples of different ones there. And you will go home with a complete sheet of how to do it, instructions, plus a materials list. So you can go and buy the things and make them at home. And so that's a lot of fun. It is on May 11th from 11 to noon in the Arboretum.
And is that one that you should sign up for?
I don't believe you need to sign up for it. It's being announced on the website. I think all comers will get the same, you know,
yes,
get an information to see what's happening.
That's right.
It's not hands-on. It's a demonstration, but you'll have everything you need to go home and do it at home. The other one is a workshop, and it's called Propagating Moss. It's on June 22nd, again from 11 to noon in the Arboretum. And this one will show you how to get moss started growing if you want moss on some rocks or you want it in between some cobblestones or you want it in a decorative place in your arbor, in your garden. Mm-hmm. Julie, question?
Julie, are you looking for more moss?
That sounds very interesting. I've never even thought about propagating moss.
It's interesting because moss can kind of take over where you don't want it, and then there are places where you would really like to have it.
That's right. Moss can be very decorative.
That's pretty.
So that's an example of the kinds of things we do. Those are things that are going on this summer. And we're always... Preston, did you have something?
And to find these demonstrations, you just, it's right at the end of Ellis Street, behind the museum Lions Club parking lot. We have a little shed there and a picnic table in a clearing of larch trees. And you can, that's where the those demonstrations will be held.
Yeah, and right behind the stadium. It's just right in that little corner there.
Yes, the far, would it be that the southwest corner of Lakeview Park.
Right. That's right. All right, so we've talked about, most of, I think you've covered everything education with the Plant Society, but we have not covered something really lovely that's a memorial for Lois Wythe, and that's a grant program.
Yes, we have an annual $500 grant in honor of our founder, Lois Wythe. And the applications for that go out sometime at the first of the year. I think we ask for them back sometime in February, and then we make the awards in March. And we've had many interesting projects over the year. We've raised our grant from 300 to 500 now, so it's a little bit better. It often supplements other funds that organizations might have to fulfill native plant endeavors. And so our most recent one this year's is going to the Sandpoint Organic Ag Center for their native plant garden to evaluate native plants in our region. So, you know, Units of Idaho Cooperative Extension will use that information to make recommendations. And through their Master Gardener program, they have a class on native plants. So there'll be a lot of information that comes out of that garden that will go to gardeners in the region.
What a great use of the grant last year.
We're looking forward to that one. So that's just being started this year. Mm-hmm. Last year, we funded the Kinnick-Sioux Land Trust for rewilding the playground at the Kootenai Elementary School. And behind the elementary school, there's a few acres of wild land back there. And there are, native trees and shrubs and herbs. And they're going to be signed. We funded the signage for those plants. And the students will be able to go out there and learn more about those
native plants. And that's Kootenai Elementary?
Kootenai Elementary.
Wow, that's great.
Right. Now, those were two organizations applying for the grant, but it isn't always a nonprofit that would apply.
That's correct. We get, I think we maybe got three or four applications this year, and it could be an individual, although we want broad exposure if we can. Mm-hmm. And we want a continued evidence of maintenance or keeping the planting looking good. Because we don't want a native plant garden that gets non-maintained.
Yes, neglected.
Yeah. Neglected.
That's right. And they do take a little while to get going.
One of the fun projects we did, I think it was now 3 years ago, is we funded the Busy Bombas Bumblebee coloring and activity book, which was created by three local gals, a local artist. And we sell that at the local nurseries and various places around town. And it's just a fun way to introduce kids to the pollen, to the arboretum. The bumblebee takes a little trip through the arboretum. And so you go with the bumblebee and discover the different plants and all kinds of fun things. So we've done a lot of interesting and fun things with this grant.
That's really neat. How was it initially funded? How did it come into being?
It was funded through the grant.
Yes, but the grant itself, where does that money come from?
It's from our membership memberships and other things that we raise money from, fundraisers that we do.
So there's a great reason to become a member. You can support these grants, awards, and see interesting uses with native plants and other creative uses. Neat. All right. So, and another reason one might want to become a member of the Native Plant Society has to do with the Landscape Committee. Who would like to address that?
Well, I have personal experience with the Landscape Committee because back in 2016, I started a major landscaping project around my house. And I invited, well, I asked the landscape committee. I became a member of KNPS and asked the landscape committee if they would come. And it was a wonderful experience. They came on a Saturday morning, and I think it was five people. And we went around my yard and kind of looked at the different areas, the moist areas and the dry areas and the hilly, rocky areas. And I think we spent about an hour and a half going around my yard, a couple hours. And then we all came inside. I served a nice, simple soup lunch. And we sat around the table and talked about my yard, about native plants. And then about a week later, Dennis Rieger, who was on the committee at that time, brought me a sketch that he had done of my yard and a plant list and where they thought specific things would go. And I have used that extensively. I didn't follow it exactly. I also did a little of my own improvising, but it was a lovely experience, and that is available to members.
Just a few, though. It's not like they're doing hundreds every summer.
Right. They do 3 to 5, I would guess, every summer. So yes, it's a good thing if you're interested to join and then get on their list.
Yes. It's truly a wonderful benefit because you'll learn so much in that experience with others that really know their native plants.
Well, it was great because they were able to tell me what was already there and things I might want to keep or define certain areas for. And then they suggested new things that I could plant. And it was a good experience.
Yeah, it sounds like it. That sounds like a great experience.
One of the things we want to be careful of in the way we approach our landscape consultation is that it doesn't interfere with local businesses that do this for their living. The nurseries or landscape architects, landscapers. So this is more of a smaller scale than you would get if you paid a professional to come out and do your design.
Yes, like a good starting point to help educate the homeowner, and then they would go on from there and hire folks as needed.
And a native plant focus is what you guys bring to
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Yes.
That's great. Well, here's the topic that I think Julie and I are pretty interested in learning more about, and that is conservation.
Okay, conservation. We do, that's another one of our mission, part of our mission is conservation. And much of it is advocacy for native plants in the Idaho Panhandle. We do some volunteer work for restoration, as I said, the Clark Fork Delta Restoration Project. And maybe we'll help out on the Pack River Delta when they get interested in putting plants out there. We'll see how that goes. But our most recent advocacy has been, there's three things we've advocated for in the last 2 or 3 years. One is the Kinixu Oversnow Vehicle Winter Travel Plan. And this is mostly, we emphasize native plant protection. That's, we don't get into other issues. That's our focus. And so because white bark pine, our habitat is in areas where oversnow vehicles will travel, we wanted to make sure that they were well protected. And so we wrote letters to the Forest Service about that plan and protecting those threatened white bark pine.
All right. Well, you sort of answered the question for me that I was going to ask, and that was for listeners who don't know about this pine, why is it important to us?
Well, the white bark pine is a high-altitude five-needle pine that is present, into Colorado and California and all the way up here in the northern Rockies. And the Clark's Nutcracker collects the seeds from the cones and buries them in various places around the area in the high elevation. And they remember, somehow, they remember where they planted. They buried those seeds, and they come back for them, and it's a food source for the Clark's Nutcracker. It's also, there are also these little caches are dug up by grizzly bears. So it supports an ecosystem, the white bark pine. And with climate change, the white bark pine can't really go much higher. They're already at the top of the mountains. So as it gets warmer, so that's why the Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service just recently, last year, listed the white bark pine as a threatened species.
great description. Thank you. All right. So that's a big project to be advocating for the winter travel plan, and you've got others.
More locally here, development plans for the Kulin Wetlands that are located just south of Priest Lake. We have written letters and working both with the Selkirk Conservation Alliance and with the Idaho Conservation League, we have written letters to support the rare plants and ecosystem of these wetlands. These are peat boglands that are rare, and they're only really found in this part of Idaho, in northern Idaho. So they're very rare and have rare species there. The other thing we have done is there's a U.S. Forest Service vegetation management project called Chloride Gold that's down along the southeast side of Lake Ponderay. And we years ago went out and surveyed for a rare plant, the clustered lady slipper orchid. And we want to make sure that those orchids and where they're located are protected. So those are the kind of things we do. We advocate for native plants.
Wow. Go ahead, Robin.
Well, I was just going to say one of the things that excites me about native plants in this area is the incredible diversity that we have. And it's in part due to the fact that we are located in the southern part of the world's largest temperate rainforest. And we don't think of this as when you say rainforest, a lot of people think of the tropics. Well, this is a temperate rainforest, and it has to do with the amount of rainfall we get. And we certainly have areas that we have microclimates. So, but we have pockets in our area of coastal rainforest plants where you have cedar trees and hemlock trees and these very shade, moist, loving, think of the Ross Creek cedars.
Yes, I was going to, thinking of the cabinets.
Yeah, and there are areas closer to here. But I moved here from the Pacific Northwest, and one of the things that amazed me as I was just walking on the road that my house is situated on, which is on a hillside, and I could count probably 7 or 8 different kinds of conifer trees growing side by side. There are places along my road where there are ponderosa pine trees very close to cedar trees. And you don't see that in the Pacific Northwest. The forests are more monoculture. Mm-hmm. You're either in Douglas fir, hemlock type, trees, or you go a little to a southern slope and you get some pine trees. Go up higher, you get different kind of trees. Here they're all kind of mixed together, and part of that is because of the amount of rainfall that we get here. We get just enough rainfall in many areas here to support cedar trees and these moisture loving trees, but we don't get so much that we deter the pines and the drier side trees. So they can actually, in places, grow together. So we have a wonderful mix of the coastal habitat and the Rocky Mountain habitat growing in various pockets in this area. And it just creates this incredible diversity, which I find fascinating.
Thank you for pointing that out, because it really is fascinating and interesting in this region that we're lucky to live in.
One of the local hikes that I like to take that goes through this rainforest area is up at the roundabout, Schweitzer Roundabout. You hike off to the north on the waterfall trail that goes down to the waterfall. And along that way, you'll see the western red cedars and the western hemlock and species that are typical in this inland rainforest.
Mm-hmm. That's a great suggestion, because it's easy for anyone to find, and they can just go there and check it out. Thank you. Well, Julie had a couple of questions that we were not sure where to fit in, so I'm going to let you go for it.
Okay. Well, as far as conservation goes, we were talking earlier about the pollinators and the natives being used to draw pollinators. Well, what happens when pesticides and insecticides are used? Is that something that you as a club discourage, or do you, is that part of your teachings?
I would say yes, we do discourage the use, especially the overuse of pesticides. And all pesticides are not created equal. There are pesticides that are called broad spectrum, which target many species of insects. There are pesticides, and even organic compounds could be considered pesticides because they do kill pests, that are more specific and target certain individual pests. And often these pests that we think of in our garden are not natives. They're invasive insects. I think I grow apple trees at home, and codling moth, the worm that gets in, is not native to North America, but has been here for decades. And I use an organic spray in the spring to smother the eggs before they hatch. Mm-hmm. And then I monitor for the flight, and then I apply an organic pesticide, if you will, at the appropriate time. And it's what we call integrated pest management. It's not just spray.
Yes.
It's be smart about what you're doing and realize what the impacts will be.
Right. Well, Kyle with the apple orchard was talking about he tracks the temperatures, and he kind of scientifically decides when the best time for spraying is to be most effective.
Absolutely, because these insects are dependent for their development on the temperature.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. And Preston, you just pointed out that in most landscapes that we develop, it's not purely natives. It's a mix.
I think I would say that probably most of our gardens have a mix. Mm-hmm. My wife and I have a garden that has a mix of natives and non-natives. And I think we're trying to shoot for 75% native or 80%, but we're not there yet, and we still have some lawn.
That's right. That's, I think, the way it is for a lot of us. And sort of leads us down the path to plant selection, because not every native-looking plant really is a true native, is it? What I'm saying is, like, some of our we can go ahead and select some species, and, for example, we'll use dogwood.
Correct. There's been, the horticultural industry is very, very busy hybridizing and changing and creating varieties of things. They may have started out as a native, but, you know, with dogwoods, we have the ones with the great big saucer-like flowers. We have the pink ones. We have all kinds of dogwoods. We do have a couple of native dogwoods here, but they're small and relatively
inconspicuous
as one of them is a wonderful little ground cover, actually. And that's a problem with terminology. You know, common names are not the same everywhere, and many plants have multiple common names, and there are a lot of things that get called dogwood, but that as you say, that mm-hmm. doesn't mean they're native. So you have to kind of learn a little bit about the scientific names and the nomenclature, and then you have to acknowledge that even if you go to a nursery and you find a plant that has the correct scientific name, it may be a variety that has been hybridized to feature some specific feature of the plant to make it more obvious. And so it's a little bit tricky, and that's one reason we like to work with Cedar Mountain Perennials,
yes.
because they
yes.
really do their research. And you have to just kind of jump in there and learn some botany.
Yes, but an easy way would be to go to the publications department
yes.
of the Plant Society.
Correct. We have published a book called How...
I've got it.
Landscaping with Native Plants in the Idaho Panhandle. It has about 185 different plants in it that are native, and we've done a lot of research about that. It's a great little book. It's small. It's easy to tuck into your backpack, carry with you when you're going hiking. It has pictures, and then it has a little brief description, and then it has suggestions for where it would do best in a garden. And I've used it both in my garden for planting things, but I also use it kind of as a plant identification book. You know, if I've seen something that I don't know what it is, I'll thumb through the book and try to find it by the picture. So it's a wonderful little book, and it is available in bookstores, at nurseries, everywhere from Bonner's Ferry down to Moscow, Idaho. And
at the meetings.
And at the meetings.
And in the museum.
Well, it's in the museum. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, right, in the museum. We don't always have it at meetings, but I'm hoping, I've done a lot of work on our website, and I'm hoping that eventually we'll be able to sell it from the website, but that's in the future. Anyway.
It'll also tell you the habitats where these native plants can be grown, because mm-hmm. some like sun, some like shade, some right. like wet, some like dry. It will also tell you if it's deer resistant, because some native plants are eaten by deers, but others are not.
Yes.
So those are features that the book offers, too.
Yes, very
helpful.
It's
a great little handbook. It really is.
I've discovered that deer will eat anything if they're hungry enough.
That's right.
But, yeah, and it also identifies pollinators, those that are especially good at attracting butterflies and things like that.
Good. Well, folks, this hour has gone by so quickly, and we only have maybe 3 or 4 minutes left, so we're going to wrap it up. But let's talk about volunteering opportunities, and then we'll...
Well, there are many opportunities to volunteer, because we're all volunteers. 100% volunteers. We do hire a summer coordinator for the Arboretum, but otherwise we're all volunteers, and that's the way it functions, and that's the way so many organizations here function.
And it's fun to volunteer with the Plant Society. You're outside usually. It's usually an interesting volunteer experience.
It's very interesting. And you can volunteer for some of these programs we talked about, working with kids, doing things like that. You can just volunteer to come and weed in the garden anytime you know you want. Check in with the volunteer coordinator. If you want to do it on a regular basis, great. If you just want to do it on a drop-in basis, great. We can use all the volunteers we can get.
Good. Well said. And folks, again, would find you by going to
www.nativeplantsociety.org. Check our Facebook page.
Very good. Have we missed anything that you might cover in 30 or 60 seconds?
I'd say grow native. Grow native is our motto.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, then I'm going to conclude a really nice talk. This has been the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society with Preston Andrews and Robin Campbell. And we've heard an awful lot about natives and this organization.
Lots and lots.
Are really being encouraged to volunteer or become a member. So thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Yes, a great, great show. Thank you both.
Yes. All right. Julie, I think we're going to run out of time for events, et cetera. We'll finish with a song. And
I think so.
That's it.
This goes out to Preston.
All right.
Etta James, At Last. And thanks for listening, everybody. This